Welcome to the SysAdmins Show, the podcast that explains everything SysAdmins do and the technology they work with. I'm your host, Dustin Ribrick, here to give a jumpstart to your IT career. Today's show is episode 37, Adam Bertram, Side Hustles, Consulting, Writing, and Training. Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to the show. I've been having some great conversations lately on LinkedIn with people who want to get started in IT, and I want to continue to have more. Anybody who's interested in learning about getting started in IT, has had kind of an interest in technology, maybe you're in high school or maybe you're just getting out of college and you want to get started in IT, find me on LinkedIn, shoot me an email, dustin@sys7show.com. My goal here in 2020 is to help as many people as possible break into IT. And I'm going to kind of do whatever I can to get you, get you started in there, going to give you any advice I can give you from what I've done and what I've heard other people doing as well. So that's pretty much it for kind of the opener here on the show. What we're going to transition into is a conversation I had last week with Adam Bertram talking about side hustles, consulting, writing, and training. And we're going to cut right into that. And then afterwards, I've got a few final thoughts after the show. I'm here with Adam Bertram. And he has been working in IT for 21 years. He is an entrepreneur, an IT influencer, Microsoft MVP, blogger, trainer, and author of Content and Marketing Writer for multiple technology companies. And that's a mouthful. So Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm really glad we got to connect. It's been a little bit of a back and forth over the past month or so as our schedules worked themselves out, but I really appreciate you making the time.
Cool, no problem.
So I guess we could start out kind of with our original conversation was going to be around getting your next awesome IT job, and you got that job, and now it sounds like you left that job. You want to talk a little bit about that as we get started?
Yeah, so just how kind of my kind of life goes, like my wife always say, it's always a roller coaster. So yeah, whenever we first kind of hooked up, you had asked like, well, would you like to come on and talk about getting your next IT job? And I was like, sure, it's great. And what you didn't realize was my history and how all the side hustles and all of my entrepreneurial adventures have went. But so yeah, so to explain it there, so yeah, about a month or so ago, you had reached out to me and I saw a post that I had written about finding your next, your next remote tech job. And I had, at the time, I had been kind of chronicling my adventures like I normally do or on Twitter. And I had finally got the job. Seemed like it was an awesome job, completely 100% remote, working for a Microsoft consulting cloud company. And, I thought it was great. They said, okay, no travel, kind of get to dictate your own schedule. Awesome. One of the best group of guys you could ever hope to work for. But during the time, they didn't have any work for me. They didn't have much work schedule for me. The Azure, where my primary focus is on Azure and cloud automation and that kind of area, they were more focused around Microsoft and Office 365. So we were working, trying to get me some work. And at the time I was thinking, I really don't have to do anything. It's good that I needed to find some more business, but at the same time, I really didn't have any, quote unquote work to do. So I could definitely go do my side thing. But what I realized was I kind of had that feeling of, I feel guilty. I have to put in at least 40 hours at this job. They're paying me a salary. And I kind of felt like I did in my previous jobs, kind of feel trapped. So only after, 22 days or something like that, I decided to quit before I was able to get going to kind of not only for my sanity, but also for theirs to kind of cut ties as quickly as possible. And realized that somebody like myself just really isn't cut out for a full-time job.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear. And I think it's a really valid point that just getting a paycheck isn't enough, right? We really ultimately need to do work that we feel matters and that we enjoy. right?
Mm-hmm.
And so even if they're willing for you to coast for a while and give you a paycheck, if you know that you're not bringing the kind of value that you'd like to bring to an organization, that just makes for a bad situation.
Yeah, I always have to have some kind of fulfillment. I think that is crucial whenever you have a job, or whether you're self-employed like I am. You know, this is the second mid six-figure job that I have quit in my career, and I finally realized when I started out my career 20 years ago, I kept jumping jobs. I had probably 6 or 7 jobs in the, what's it been, almost 20 something years now that I've been in IT. And what I would do, I was constantly hopping jobs, you know, go to the next job for a salary of 10K, maybe 15K more a year, do the next and hop, 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 until eventually I got to a point where I thought I was making great money, but I was just miserable. And that was the first time, that was, gosh, probably 10 years or so ago, that was the first time that I actually quit for less money. And the next job I had, I loved. It was less money, but I was more happy and just more fulfilled. And ever since that opportunity, that chance that I got to say, you know, I don't care about the money. You know, as long as I have enough to feel safe, my family is safe, we can pay our bills, we can have some savings, that's completely fine with me. And taking that kind of my own vice there over the years, it's managed to, frankly, not looking for money. Somehow money started coming to me when I didn't really try. So it's kind of the, not unbelievable, but kind of different situation. If you work towards the things that you love, you'll naturally put more passion into your work, and people will see that, and then naturally will just tend to come to you. That's at least what I found.
Well, and a lot of times the work that you love ends up helping people, right? And a lot of your work revolves around helping people. And when you help people, they pay you, right? They respond, or at least the net benefit of that results in you getting paid in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. If we can take a look back kind of in your early days of IT, how did you get what got you interested in IT, and how did you get your initial first start in IT?
Yeah. So I was one of those little nerds at, I was what, 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, writing batch files for my computer. So ever since I was really young, I mean, my mom even has pictures of me at 4 or 5 years old in front of the computer. For some reason, computers have just fascinated me my entire life. And luckily, I was one of those people that have known that I wanted to go up working with computers and technology my entire life. So, throughout high school, I would play with computers, didn't have an internet connection for a while, play with defragmenting my hard drive and making it faster. And then whenever I went into to college, I started out as a student worker in the computer services department. I was essentially a $6 an hour computer tech. We would go around and with an Office CD, going from computer to computer, installing, I think it was Office 97 or 2003, I can't remember at the time. But so yeah, I did that for a while, just went around fixing faculty computers, helping out with the students with the computer labs and all that. And then since then, I've kind of went from then until about, so probably what's 5-6 years ago here locally, I went from job to job. You know, I went from student worker to help desk position to system administrator. I was a network engineer for a while with my CCNA. I did VoIP things. I did some software development. I kind of bumped around like a pinball machine for a while. And it wasn't really until maybe 5 to 7 years ago, I started to really get more into the community. That's when my career, in my opinion, really changed. When I started getting in the community, doing blogging, getting on Twitter, and kind of reaching out and helping other people. It was that time to when I reached on to PowerShell. So I had kind of a catalyst there that I found a piece of technology that I really loved doing. For some reason, PowerShell was the thing that really got me enthusiastic about learning new things and sharing the knowledge and things that I've learned over the years. And since then, it's kind of snowballed. So I got my Microsoft MVP. Was it 5 years ago or so? Going to do all the conference route, doing a whole ton of writing. I discovered I thoroughly enjoy technical writing. So I've done a lot of writing for multiple publications, doing lots of training. So I a Pluralsight course author, doing some LinkedIn Learn course authoring. I don't do as much as full hands-on the keyboard coding or sysadmin work that I used to do, but now I sort of take that knowledge that I've gained and then I'm able to dabble in various things, and then take that and write content around that, whether that's written content, courses, a book. And I've kind of really, my career has significantly changed in the past 5 or 7 years for the better. And it's really what's allowed me to now be self-employed.
That's awesome. And it sounds like kind of in the early years, right, you kind of got a serious depth and breadth of knowledge that prepped you for what you're doing today and all the, you know, the help that you're bringing to other people.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I didn't really think of it at the time. I was just kind of pursuing, and I still do, just pursuing the latest shiny thing out there. But at the same time, I didn't realize it. But looking back, you're completely right. I was able to get a full view of the entire stack of everything from, the OSI layer, understanding everything from layer 1 to 7, from the network side, the voice telephony side, to the software development. Now I'm more kind of in the software development stage, more specifically in the DevOps kind of arena. But yeah, you're right. All that experience really helped me out now where I am today.
Because if you look at the salaries that come around along with the DevOps position, right, a lot of people are getting out of maybe a 4-year school or even just out of high school, but they're technical and they've gotten some certs and they want that salary, right? So that's one of the things, along with the interest and the passion, right, is drawing them to that. But they may not have those years of experience that you have and all the different kinds of experience. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're really ready for it yet. I'm not sure if it's something that you can just jump into. What do you think?
You're right. I think I saw some chatter about that on Twitter here within the past few weeks. I think that was actually directed towards InfoSec. So it was a conversation which can apply to DevOps as well. People were saying there are no entry level InfoSec jobs, because to know InfoSec, you have to learn, application development, sort of. You have to be the sysadmin. You have to kind of have this broad depth of knowledge. And it's similar for DevOps, sure, because DevOps combines software development and traditional operations roles. And I think it's very similar there. If people come at DevOps from kind of two different angles, what I've seen is that, like me, I came from the sysadmin ops background. I always had a real interest and passion for automating stuff. So that's when I got into scripting. And then that's why I fell in love with PowerShell, just because I loved automating things. And eventually, over time, that just came about to where, I am a developer now. I like writing code. One of my previous jobs, I was actually a PowerShell developer. I wrote PowerShell all day, every day, to automate all kinds of things in the DevOps space. But there's some people that come at it from, they are a software developer that would had to bring up their own infrastructure and their own environment and had to learn kind of the ops background. But yeah, I think that to be truly successful, you might be able to get into it at first, but to really excel at some kind of DevOps position, you really kind of have to have that mentality, have your mind wrapped around what are the goals of an ops person. The goal is to keep the service running and reliable. What is the goal of a software developer? Well, to write the code bug-free that provides value to the end user. And how do you, deliver that code to the end user on the infrastructure without keeping it, without sacrificing reliability. So, yeah, I think it's very important to they can, you can definitely get into it, but I think at first you can't really tackle both ecosystems really at the same time. I really think at first just follow whichever path that most interests you, and then just slowly kind of, you know, go into to one or the other.
That makes a lot of sense. Very cool. So let's get into kind of the main topic for today: side hustles, consulting, writing, and training. And it sounds like you found out that you wanted to work for yourself kind of early on after trying out a bunch of day jobs that didn't really work out for you. What was the first thing that you did working for yourself?
Yeah, so to go back before full-time self-employment, I've had side hustles for 15, 17 years or something. I have started and stopped multiple businesses. You could call them a business, but it's more of a lifestyle business, which is me. I never really had any employees, but I've kind of always had that inkling that, you know, that regardless of what job it is, I've always had that feeling of, well, I want to do more. This job is holding me back. I'm tied to this desk for 40 hours a week when I could be doing something more enjoyable. I could be having a more of an impact on more people. And I kind of got my fix doing that by side hustle. So I my first venture into a side hustle, I had started selling used books on Amazon. That led to the point where I had brought my wife in and some of my family, where we were bringing in literal semi loads of books and going through that. And that's when I also started with software development as well. I had built a small application in PHP to sort the books, go out and to Amazon, find the best price and figure out what price we can sell that book for and what condition it's for. And then kind of get an estimate on profit. So that was kind of my first foray into software development. Since then, I realized that selling used books, you may make quite a bit of money over the month if you work really, really hard, but the profit margins were terrible. So then I got more into information marketing, if you will, where I started a blog showing people how to sell used books online. It was the blog site was actually called sellyourbooksonline.com. And that's where I got into more of the information marketing, to where, you know, you don't have to go anywhere. You just sit at your computer and create content, create blog posts, create ebooks, any kind of content that can really help somebody at the time sell used books online. So that eventually went away. I just kind of lost interest in it. It really wasn't doing much at all. It was a big strain on the family for all the time that it took. And since then, I've kind of had started the side hustle, started adamtheautomator.com, started that site. That's where it was kind of another reason I was starting it, because I was really interested in something at my day job and I wanted to share it with the world and maybe build some documentation for myself. And kind of ever since then, I've learned that, you know, I want to do this full time, but I was always scared to do it. But within, you know, the past two or three, 2 years or so ago, I quit my job. I live in Southern Indiana, but I had a job in Silicon Valley making great money, especially living in Indiana, where the prices are really cheap. That's when I decided, you know, I'm just going to use the savings that I have built up from that job, try it out, quit. And then for the last maybe 2 years after that, I started a small startup called TechSnips, to where I had brought in lots of different people with the community that I had met over the years to bring in and do videos, little snippet videos. They're now all on YouTube. That I ended up kind of losing interest because, and also losing my savings account because it didn't make that much money. It was a risk that myself and my wife thankfully let me take. And since then, I've kind of taken a step back from that, and I will be selling that pretty soon to a partner of mine. But now I'm kind of doing my, you know, Adam the Automator thing, just doing the content, the blogging, the courses, and all that good stuff, doing that full time.
Cool. So it seems like you initially, right, knew that you kind of had this itch, right, this desire to do more, and you looked around and kind of saw a need that you can make some money at. So that's when you started selling books. And then mm-hmm. once you were more or less proficient at that and kind of, you know, tired of the same old thing, you said, hey, what can I do with the knowledge I currently have? Well, I can sell this knowledge to other people in a way, right, that's helpful to them. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of continued to do that over and over again. And I think this is the kind of the important part for people that are interested in a side hustle, because a lot of people maybe have the interest and the time, but they don't know what to do. They don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is just looking around at what you already know or what you already do, and how can you just bring that to the right people or more people?
Yeah, I agree completely. I've even told my stepmom, she has a job. She works one day a week, part time. She's not really feeling fulfilled in what she's doing, but she loves taking care of animals. And I was telling her, just like I tell a lot of people in the same situation, you know, everybody has a unique skill that other people want to learn about. You know, maybe she has a specific way to feed a cow, or a specific recipe she used to take care of the pigs, or they live on a farm. And it's the same thing, same advice I give to people in IT. You know, everybody has some kind of knowledge that other people want to learn about. And the first response that I get from that, like, well, everybody's already done it. There's a blog post on it. And I always come back with, it's how you package it. Lots of people come to your blog or your Twitter account or your forum post or whatever it is, and they come for for your knowledge, for the answers. And once you do it over and over and over again, you sort of build up an authority in that particular space, and over time, that your personality becomes can really shine through, and people will start to come back for, oh, hey, what does Dustin have to say about this thing, or what does Adam have to say about this thing? And that's when you kind of know that you're doing the right thing. You've helped so many people. During that time, you put your own personality and your own spin on solving people's problems and really helping them. They really appreciate that. And that's when it sort of snowballs. People will come back and read your stuff or watch your videos and really appreciate what you personally are doing, regardless if there's 50 other people that have kind of accomplished, tried to teach that same concept. There's just so many things out there, especially in IT, that you can really hit really niche topics on different things. But there's so much stuff that you can do. I really think people would really succeed in multiple ways if they can just, you know, get out there. And I always recommend starting a blog, because it seems to be the easiest way to get started.
Yeah. And everybody learns so much differently. So somebody might learn from video, somebody might learn from audio, somebody might learn from reading blog posts or books. And on each one of those platforms, everybody has their own particular personality and style. So, you know, your writing style is going to be different in some way, or your, you know, video style is going to be different in some way than the 10 or 20 other people that are already doing it. And that's going to bring value to some subset of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, as a content creator myself, I know that it's discouraging to see how many people are already doing it, right? When you want to get into a particular field. And it's really important to just ignore that and just remember that, you know, everybody has to start somewhere. And it's actually a blessing if you don't get really big really fast, because you need to grow carefully over time and understand what that growth means and know how to deal with it and know how to, treat your audience as it grows with you.
Yeah, I can give you a short story. So I'm sure you're familiar with Robocopy, the tool that
yep.
seems like every sysadmin knows about. And Robocopy's been around for a long, long time. And there is a lot of content out there about Robocopy. Here within the past, I don't know, it was a couple of months ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to write a blog post on Robocopy. Because every post that I went to always missed out on one or two little switches that I needed, or it wasn't quite the specific use case that I was looking for. So I decided to write a blog post called Robocopy, the Ultimate Guide. It was essentially a blog post that took all of the knowledge and all of the the snippets and the use cases and everything from all these different blog posts that I had written, that I had seen over the years, that I had read, and boiled them down into one single kind of authoritative piece. And what I found was, after over time, over it was only it was a couple of weeks, that my RoboCopy blog post was number as on it was like top three on Google. And that's a reason right there. Doesn't matter if there's thousands and thousands of blog posts on to do this with RoboCopy, do that with RoboCopy. If you can solve more problems for people and write in a way that's entertaining, engaging, and is fun to read and contains all the information that they want to look for, people will come to that. You could either solve problems that have that small niche. I mean, you won't have definitely the competition, but if you definitely do have the ability to write something as general as, hey, here's how you use RoboCopy and get on the top three or top four of Google, if you do it better than everyone else and just more in depth, more thorough with some knowledge that is clear, that you know what you're doing, you can really write about anything and be successful.
You want to talk a second about consistency? Because you mentioned it, but I mean, if you write one or two blog posts, no one's going to come and see, right? Like, what kind of consistency would you think somebody would need to have if they're starting a new blog before they start to see some traction?
Yeah, consistency is a big thing, not only from your mental perspective, but also from Google's perspective. So if it's all about consistency for you mentally, it's all about routine. We're all about habits and routines. If you don't get in the routine of scheduling a blog post a week or even a month, some kind of consistent routine, you're definitely not going to get the kind of traction that you're looking for. Because, let's say that somebody comes to your site, subscribes to your RSS feed, and really looks forward to the next blog post by you. It's going to happen. It will happen if you start your own blog. You will have people that look forward to the content that you put out. If they get to the point to where, oh, where'd it go? He didn't write a post this week. And you kind of come back, oh, well, I just didn't have the time. You're not putting the priority on that. And they will see that in you. They will see that, oh, well, he doesn't really care about this blog, so I'm not going to either. Not only that, Google also really awards sites. They really rank. That's one of the ranking algorithms for Google is consistency. So, you talk to a lot of SEO guys. I'm definitely not an SEO person myself, but I know enough to know that it's all about consistency, whether it's one post a week, two posts a week, three posts a week, or even a couple posts a month. I've settled on, I originally started out with one post a week, but now I'm doing three posts a week, not from my only perspective, but I've started a guest author program to where I have other people come in from the community and write blog posts on my blog. Then I go and then I pay them a little bit, promote the blog posts. And so that not only I can get more content on the blog and keep up that consistency, but also help others in the community kind of get some exposure and being able to help them promote their own blog.
That's an amazing program. I actually checked out your application process and kind of the requirements, and even just on the website where you talk about what it means to be a blogger and how to write a quality blog post, and how to focus on the story that you're telling, right? Because you got to reel people in. I mean, that just kind of shows how much of a trainer you've become for other bloggers.
Yeah, I mean that program, I started that it was from a partnership perspective, because not a lot of people that people that are just starting out, maybe they don't have a blog, maybe they've been in IT for 20 years, but they've never had the opportunity or really had the inclination to write and to share what they know. And the whole purpose of that was number one, I'd wanted more content for my blog to get, increase the brand awareness stuff. But at the same time, I also wanted it to be more of a mentoring opportunity, because I've been writing for years. I've written thousands of articles, a book, and all kinds of other things. And I take that as a mentoring opportunity, because if you don't have a blog, it's really hard to get traction. It's really hard to learn. Like you were saying before, it's really hard to know how to write, how to present yourself, how to present the information in a way that is engaging and entertaining for people. And that's one thing I do. And plus, it's a good promotional thing. It's a good kind of jumpstart. I always tell people, you know, if you want to, maybe you've been writing on the blog sporadically for the past few years, but you really haven't been focused on, you know, promotion and getting known and getting in the community and things. Writing a blog post on, you know, my blog or other blogs is a good way to promote yourself, get to that jumpstart. You know, my blog's been around forever and I've highly been focusing a lot and it gets quite a bit of traffic. And what you need to do is find people like myself, like my blog, or maybe the foursysops.com blog, lots of other bloggers around the community that you're in, and partner with them, say, hey, can I write a blog post for you? And they'll usually take it because sure, they're always looking for great content to help people, but it'll also help you in the same time. If you link to your blog and say, hey, if you want to learn more about this thing, hey, check out my blog. And it's a really good way to jumpstart your blog as well.
That's awesome. And that's basically what I've started doing here with my podcast. Is originally it was just me talking about sysadmin topics by myself, right? And at some point I'm like, well, I need some more engagement. And I got some feedback from people and I started interviewing people and just asking people, hey, do you want to talk? And that got the conversation going, brought some fresh content from other perspectives and gets a little bit of promotion in there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody likes to talk about themselves. And if you right. You interview somebody, and they're definitely going to, if you tweet it out or some kind of social media platform or mention the other person, chances are they're going to retweet it or share it with their friends. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, look at this podcast interview you did. And that not only helps them, but it also helps you.
It's great. And it's just so cool to see the community, you know, be able to, we're not competing, we're just all trying to, you know, lift each other up. So,
yep.
It's fun.
Definitely.
So when did you get started or your first content, your first course creation? Because you've been putting out a lot of content, but creating a course, like a packaged course or like a LinkedIn course, right, is kind of a different experience. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So my first course was on learning PowerShell, and that was actually from Udemy. That was 10 years, no, maybe 10 years ago, something like that. I've been using PowerShell forever. So I had kind of had that same itch to scratch. I wanted to be a content creator. I was doing a little bit of blogging. It really wasn't much, kind of here and there. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of these courses on Udemy, but there really wasn't any good ones on PowerShell. And I know a fair amount about PowerShell. So I decided to do a course on that. So And Udemy, if you're not familiar with Udemy, Udemy is a completely self-service, completely different from a Pluralsight or a LinkedIn Learning. But essentially, you build the curriculum for your course, record it. I had an old microphone I set in my closet and recorded all these video snippets and put it up on Udemy. And since then, there's like tens of thousands of people that have watched that and. I've literally made tens of thousands of dollars on that because it's been up there for so long. And that was kind of my first foray into building a course. And since then, it's definitely learned a ton from just that. But I learned more from doing my first Pluralsight course. Because if Pluralsight courses are you familiar with Pluralsight by any chance?
Just briefly, I'm aware of the name and what it is.
So essentially it's, you know, Pluralsight Learning, lynda.com, Skillsoft, all kind of the same vein, e-learning. So I had started off building a Pluralsight course. And at first I came in thinking, well, this is going to be just kind of like Udemy. I'm sure they're a big company. They have team content teams and all this stuff. But I'm thinking, well, they're just going to kind of let me do what I want to do. That wasn't farthest from the truth. What you find with a company like Pluralsoft or LinkedIn Learning or Skillsoft is another one I'm working with now. They really, it's more of a professional outfit, I guess you will. Do you think of Udemy as kind of the, you know, anybody and their brother can go in there and put on a course. But what I found with especially with Pluralsight, since I've done, I don't know, it's like 9 or 10 courses now on Pluralsight, to where they will, once you get into the company like that, they partner with you. They will, that's where I learn so much about what I, how I write the content now. They provide you with so much feedback. They're very stringent on quality. So previously, whenever I was working on a Udemy course, I could just put up whatever. If the audio sounded like crap, sure, nobody's going to test it. And, you know, just you that was getting dinged from the customers. But with Pluralsight, they would, and with LinkedIn Learning and all these other more like quote unquote professional e-learning sites, they will take you through a process. They will take you through a multiple review processes. They will take you, it's kind of like writing a published book. They go through an editing process. They will give you feedback on your slides, your tone, your audio quality. They will give you feedback on everything. And doing courses was by far and away the most beneficial educational experience for me, and financially beneficial experience for me, just because that was my first time really. I guess really making content creation and training more of a first-class citizen in my eyes, rather than just occasionally writing a blog post or just throwing up some videos on YouTube, whatever. That really truly taught me how the reader or the viewer or the student really consumes the content. What would they like to see? How are you supposed to act? How are you supposed to engage with the reader? Engage with your audience. They really taught me so much with that. And, you know, ever since then, I've taken the knowledge I've gained from the team at Pluralsight and kind of taken that over to, you know, more recently it's been LinkedIn Learning as well, where I did a Learning PowerShell core course on there. Yeah, I definitely think that's been hugely beneficial to my career and to what I've learned. And to answer your question, kind of what the process kind of looks like, if anybody is interested in doing a course. First off, I don't recommend doing a course for if you're have never done any kind of content creation like that in the past, because it is quite the ordeal. Even a small course, you can't just sit down and start recording stuff. So just give an example of the course length. So most of my courses are between, I don't know, 2 and 3 hours. And it generally takes me 80 to 100 hours to build one of those, because the recording piece is just a small portion of what the actual course is about. You have to design the curriculum. If you don't already have curriculum set ahead, ahead of time, then you have to build all the demos out. You have to build the demo environments. You have to figure out, okay, am I going to lose the student here? Am I going to lose a student here? Constantly have to keep that on back of your mind and brainstorm out and build the demos, build the slides. And when it finally comes down to the recording piece, that's the kind of the small, probably 10% of what it takes. So I definitely would recommend starting out blogging, especially, and really getting your feet wet there. And then maybe eventually getting into doing a Udemy course, or doing maybe a small course on putting up for free on YouTube, and then eventually getting to the point where, okay, I'm confident enough now, and then approaching somebody like a LinkedIn Learning or Pluralsight or Skillsoft or one of these other e-learning companies.
And are they paying you completely on commission, or are they giving you some sort of upfront money, even if it's not a successful product, but you complete it?
Yeah, so it's different depending. The model is different depending on the company that you author the course for. Most of them will. Let me think. All of them. But from my experience so far, all of them. But Skillsoft was the ones they don't give you. They don't pay you royalties. So with Udemy, you will author the content, you will build the course, and they don't give you any kind of completion fee. You just kind of put it up for, I don't know, $50 or whatever, $100 or whatever you want, and then you sell it. Essentially, it's just kind of a self-service platform. They don't do any marketing for you. They do somewhat, but then you go into something like Pluralsight or LinkedIn Learning, to where they will give you an upfront fee, a completion fee, and then you will get royalties or viewership payments after that, depending on how many people actually watch your videos.
Interesting, because I imagine a lot of people are interested in doing this kind of thing eventually. And I think giving the advice of starting out, creating some sort of content before thinking of the big package, because I don't think a lot of people would realize that 80 to 100 hours is required for a 2-hour course.
Yeah, you'll find that out real quick. And plus with the Pluralsight, LinkedIn Learning, and these other companies, you have to actually audition for the role. So they're typically not going to take somebody that has no experience whatsoever with content creation as well. So it's very important to learn how to create content, how to kind of structure the curriculum and things. But yeah, that was one of the big things that I learned, like, oh, just a 2-hour course. Oh, that'll just take me, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, 10 hours or 15 hours. I'll just throw stuff together. If you probably could, if you just kind of throw stuff out there and kind of teach it as you think about it. But to build a really quality course, you really have to take the time to do so much planning and building up ahead of time.
And the course content, if it, let's say it is a video course, all the documentation and slides and everything, that comes before in your workflow, that comes before the video recording?
Yeah, everything is, the video recording is only the last 10%.
Okay.
Some people are different. Some people will record, they're better at winging it off the cuff. They still have some planning ahead of time because they have to build out the curriculum and know what a module is going to look like, what are the lessons going to look like. And then you have some people that take that a step further and then build out everything, like literally every single, you know, all the words that they're going to say in the slides and the demos, and really front load all that stuff and then record. I'm kind of in the middle, to where you still have to build out the curriculum, figure out what modules are going to be where and what order, what the lessons are going to look like, what you're going to essentially cover, and then build out all the slides and build the demo environments. I build out all that stuff first, and then I will, in the PowerPoint notes, I would actually write out what I'm going to say in the slides. But the demos are kind of free form. Once I've built out the demo environment and kind of have the scripts and everything ready, I'll just kind of walk through it and teach them that way.
And then, do they help you with technology at all? I mean, if you don't have a video or audio studio available to you, is there a place that they can send you to do that final 10% of the recording?
Yeah. So Udemy doesn't. Udemy's the self-service. You're kind of on your own there. Pluralsight, I don't know if they still do this. They will send you a recording package from home. Mm. They're all from home, so they'll send you whatever you need there, reimburse you for your mic and preamp and whatever you have there. And then LinkedIn Learning is kind of a different, a little bit different. They prefer you to fly out to Carpentia, California, and they have a professional studio there that they do the recordings for, but they also have the option for some people to do remote recording as well.
Well, I could see that it's kind of intimidating, right? You've never been on video before, potentially. Well, hopefully, I guess if you're doing a course like that, you would have been on maybe at your home, but now you're kind of like, the pressure's on, you're in a studio, they say go.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I know. I did a video one, a Microsoft Virtual Academy course a few years ago with Ashley McClone, the GoTee PFE Active Directory guy. And that was my first time actually being on video, not just doing screencasts. It was actually me in a studio in front of a desk and say, "Hey, I'm Adam." That was quite a surreal experience, but it was definitely a fun time.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of YouTube. And it's amazing just over maybe the last couple of months, how much more comfortable you get in front of the video camera than when you first start out. Cause it's just, you don't know what to do when you first start out.
Yeah. I still need a lot of practice. I need practice of is public speaking. I'm trying to just get out and do some more conferences. Mm. I don't do enough of that stuff. So I'm trying to get out of my introvert bubble a little bit.
You mentioned that you're doing a lot of kind of working on the business and not necessarily dabbling as much with technology as you used to. What are you doing to stay current with technology?
Yeah, so one of the great things about my position now in my career is that I get the ability to dabble and to dive as deep as what I want. You know, previously, when I had a job, I was told, you stay in this area, you do this with technology, we need to solve these problems. Nowadays, I still want to get my hands dirty. That's one of the reasons why I attempted a full-time job here a couple months ago, because I really wanted to I didn't want to be one of those trainers that you get a Global Knowledge or New Horizons, that you come in there and they say, well, I haven't used this technology since 2003, but we're just going to go through the book. That's not what I wanted. I'm trying to what I'm doing up until now is that I try to kind of get keep my finger on the pulse of the community through Twitter and through meeting other people at conferences, figure out, well, what are you using? What technology? What's hot right now? Do I need to learn Docker? Do I need to learn Kubernetes? Or do I need to learn the latest thing in Azure? So what I've done is, because right now I'm primarily a content creator, I will dive deep into something. So recently it's been Azure DevOps. So I don't have a need for Azure DevOps to be a content creator. I have a business, but I don't need to set up a full CI/CD automated pipeline. But I think it's an interesting topic. So what I do is I will go down through and learn, read the documentation, and figure out interesting use cases and build a project for myself. Once I learn that, then I will then transform that into content, whether that be multiple blog posts, a course, some videos. I then kind of the content then spurs off of that. However, here recently, because I still wanted to stay more technical, I tried to measure, I tried to weigh my business 20% consulting, hands-on tech, and then 80% content creation. So I've recently taken on a contract role to do PowerShell automation. I'm an automation DevOps engineer again. Where I have more of a contract role, we have the flexibility to kind of get hands-on in a production environment and learn what is still being used out there. I'm then going to use that information and that knowledge that I gained from that and use that for ideas for my content creation part of the business.
So how do you balance the time that you're spending in your business, the time that you're spending on these contract jobs, and the time that you spend kind of disconnected from that, right? Friends and family.
Yeah. So I don't recommend this, but I don't have any hobbies. Honestly, my work is tech is what I love to do. I thankfully have a wonderful wife and I have two kids that I spend a fair amount of time with, but definitely my wife spends more time with them. She kind of takes care of the household, makes sure that all that stuff's done. And then that I kind of take, I don't know, I maybe 60, 70 hours a week, something like that, to where I try to just get all this stuff done. I do some of the contract jobs. They're not 40 hours a week, maybe, I don't know, 20, 30. And then the other part is, like you said, building courses, videos, writing blog posts, all right, writing articles, trying to find other people to, in the community, getting involved, going to conferences, all of that. Good stuff. So I definitely stay busy just because, my tech and my career is a huge part of what I do. Love my family to death, but I definitely don't spend, I've never been that type of person that was able to just, to work for it 40 hours, clock out at 5 o'clock and then forget about it until Monday. It's never been my personality. And I'm lucky to get to the point to where I can still kind of balance work and family, because I have a great wife that takes care of a lot of the family responsibilities.
Yeah, I think that's kind of unique to IT, where we actually just, not all of us, but a lot of us do just love our jobs. And it is our passion as well as the thing that we make money at.
Yeah, I actually did a poll on Twitter last week, and I think it's got over 700 votes now. And just had a poll of how much do you love your job? It was either hate it, dislike it, it's okay, it pays the bills, or love it. And 48% of the people said love it, and 43% said, man, it pays the bills. And some people said, well, it's not really love it, I like it. So, it's true. The at least for my Twitter followers, the big percentage of them, they really enjoy what they do. And that's just, like you said, that's just kind of a natural working on weekends or working in the evenings and just fiddling with new things and learning new things, I think definitely is unique to IT.
Yeah, because I work 40 hours a week, then I come home, spend some time with the kids are in bed, and then I come back down to the lab and spend 2 or 3 or 4 more hours just messing with technology, right? Or talking to people about technology, right? So it's just, I can't really get enough of it.
Yep. Yeah. You have the same kind of vein that I am. You know, we love what we do. We love playing with tech. And then we have that passion and that we take the initiative to do things that, you know, really don't have to do. You have a job. I make enough money to do a lot less than what I'm doing now. I just love what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm sure that throughout the day, you come up with a lot of different ideas. How do you decide which ideas are worth investing time on? Maybe it's like a new business idea, right? Like you had TechSnips and now you're spinning it off, right? Your different websites and stuff. How do you decide and how far do you go before you've taken an idea and maybe it's not working out and you let it go?
So right now I have an approach that I try to find a marriage between an interest of mine and an interest of my readers or viewers or content viewers. Because, you know, right now I could just completely geek out on something and you know, go down a rabbit hole that I'm interested in, but nobody else is interested in. That to me, that doesn't serve me because number one, I'm self-employed. I need to find some financial incentive for me to do it, to make money, to provide my family and all that good stuff. But at the same time, I don't want to be hating what I do. I've turned down contracts. I'm like, yeah, this pays well, but that work sounds terrible. So I'm not going to do it. So it's always a fine line between what you're interested in doing and what, for me as a content creator, what others are willing to like, how that will help them. And that only kind of snowballs from there. So just to give you an example of that here recently, I was at a previous job where we used Team Foundation Server. I was essentially a PowerShell developer. We used Team Foundation Server and Git for source control. And I was kind of interested in like, well, maybe I should learn this whole Azure DevOps thing. And I didn't know, I was interested in it enough. And I saw that there was enough traction with the community and people wanted to learn more about it. I kind of sent out a poll on Twitter. I said, is this something that, you know, where should I go? Should I go with Azure DevOps? Should I go with Azure Functions? You know, what area should I go for? And the overwhelming majority said, well, Azure DevOps. So what I do now is I come up with a topic that I think was, that's really interesting. I want to learn more about that. And then I kind of poll other people in the community to ask them, it's like, well, what do you want? Or maybe I will go to Google and type in some things or Google Analytics and see what are the more popular topics. And then I try to craft content around that to not only provide people with content that they want to read, but at the same time, the kind of content that I would like to create as well. That's for content. As far as like the higher level things like business, nowadays I have decided I really don't want to go down the actual quote unquote startup TechSnips world because it's such a different beast. There's so many things you have to do to build an actual business with contractors and people and all the systems and everything operations that you have to do. I decided I don't want to do that. I want to stick more towards more of a lifestyle business, which essentially is just kind of me coming up with ideas and just slowly but surely building up. Maybe I'll build an app here and there and see how it does. But mostly it's about me building content for other people and the occasional little idea here and there about an app or some kind of need that I see in the market. But you know, right now it's just mostly just me sticking to myself, doing my content creation thing, figuring out what the most shiny object is in the room and kind of chasing that.
So I imagine that most people that are listening that are interested in getting kind of towards the self-employment side of things already have some sort of gainful employment. Right. Most of them probably have, even if they don't like the job, they probably have some sort of job that's meeting their daily bills. And they're wondering probably two things. First of all, how long is it going to take for me to make enough money at this right side hustle so that I can leave the day job because I don't like it? And when I have the new, you know, self-employment deal, how do I how do I know how much money I'm going to make, right? How do I budget that? Because maybe if you're getting royalties, right, that's kind of one income source. If you're getting ad revenue, that's another one. If you're selling some sort of content yourself, maybe that's a big payday after you release it, and then, you know, several months of no income. So how do you balance that with your income streams?
Yeah, so I do that mainly through diversification. So to give you an example, there's many ways to do this. To me, I think in IT, in our space, there are two different ways. You can choose one or the other, or a combination of both. Number one, what I've seen is a lot of IT folks, they think of going on their own as consulting. They think of, I'm just going to be doing contract work, consulting other people, fixing stuff, doing projects, that sort of thing. And then for some reason, a lot of people don't really even consider the other option of content creation, helping people through courses, articles, videos, all that sort of thing. I started out with not consulting, because I've always been a big proponent of, you know, not trading your hours for dollars. Because, you know, if you're a typical consultant, you kind of come in, you do some work, you get paid by the hour, and you go away, and oh, that's gone. It's a short-term fix for a long-term problem. And I think that if you truly want to be successful at IT, because us techies, we know a lot of things that a lot of people want to know about. I think it always needs to be a combination. So I started out with not consulting, but more content creation. I was writing articles, and that's at the time whenever I quit for the first time. I was had a few Pluralsight courses under my belt. I was getting some royalties from that. I had a consistent stream of freelance writing clients that I did for articles. You would not believe how much demand there is out there from vendors, media publications, and all these other sites that want people that can. Technical people that can write about technical things. It's a rare trait that so many people are willing to pay you well for. So I started out with that. I started out with doing Pluralsight courses on the side, getting that kind of passive income going. So, you know, every quarter I get paid so much. Started that snowball rolling. And I'm a big proponent of diversification, especially when you're self-employed. You have to diversify. You know, there may be a time when Pluralsight comes up and says, oh, sorry, we're not going to pay you anymore. And you have to be able to take that hit. But like my wife always said, it's a roller coaster as an entrepreneur being self-employed, because, you know, you don't have that consistent paycheck to remedy that. You really have to diversify as much as possible. Find out, you know, what are all the different avenues of income creation I can do. And for me, I want to be, like I was telling you, I want to be 20% consulting. So I want to get my hands on, but at the same time, that's another completely different stream of income. I want to keep doing writing for my freelance writing clients that I have. I have ad revenue on my blog. That's another one. I have, I've written a few eBooks that I have on LeanPub. That's another stream of income that I have. So I've been trying to just diversify as much as possible, because now, you know, after doing this for so many years and really building up that snowball, you know, I've taken this contract. It's a well-paying contract, but the beauty of it is, even if it, you know, I don't care if it goes away. You know, I care because it's good money. But I've been able to build this kind of net of other income streams out there, to where my family and I are going to be just fine if it goes away all of a sudden. So at that time, once you get to that point, you start to really have power in what you can, how you can control your career. Whenever you can just, you know, drop a six-figure job and think, yeah, whatever, I'll just get something else. You know, you have that power, and it definitely does not come immediately. But if you just keep working on it year after year after year, you'll get to the point where that's how it kind of feels. If you really focus on, you know, just like we were talking about at the start of the episode, if you really focus on just helping as many people as you possibly can, the money will just come. And eventually with the money comes more of the freedom and the more of the choice and the power that you have to really choose what you want to do when you want to do it.
That's awesome. I think we're going to wrap up here in just a second. As people are listening, from your perspective, what kind of personality is the best for this type of work?
In my perspective, the best type of personality is somebody that's pretty independent. You have to be you have to be able to support yourself. You could still be a team player, but at the end of the day, it's you and your family's livelihood that depends on you bringing in the money. You have to be independent. You have to know how to get things done yourself. You have to be creative. So if you have lots of ideas, if you're not I really think you need to not be a yes man, to where if you have a job just because you have a boss that tells you what to do and you only do what your boss tells you to do, you're not going to be good at self-employment. You really have to be self-driven, self-motivated. You have to get off on new ideas and get really excited and inspired about, you know, building new projects and helping people. Another big thing that personality trait, I really think you have to have, I really think you need to be somebody that kind of goes against the grain. You know, you're the type of person at your job that is constantly coming up with new ways to do things. And, you know, if the boss tells you, no, we're not going to do that right now, you're kind of independent enough and stubborn enough to where, well, I'm just going to do it anyway and try to and prove to you that it's the right way to do it. I really think you kind of have to have that streak of not of stubbornness, but not full on hating authority for the thing, but you really have to be self-driven and motivated and know and not really let anyone or anything get in your way to doing what you want to do.
Great. I think that's going to help a lot of people kind of figure out, you know, if this is, they're cut out for this or not.
And yeah, it's definitely not for everyone.
Right. And nothing is permanent, right? You can try it and see if it's for you. That's the whole idea of doing it kind of on the side, right? And if you like what you're doing, then you can try to transition more to it. If you don't, just go back to work.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely recommend to save up a nice, you need a buffer, a financial buffer, because you're going to have those months where you're not making hardly any money. You're going to have those months where you're making a lot of money. You need to save up a buffer if you do have a job before you even think about venturing out on your own.
Awesome. Well, as we're at the end of the show here, is there anything that you want to plug? Anything, where can people get a hold of you if they want to potentially write for your blog? Where can they go?
Sure. I am at adamtheautomator.com. I have a what I call ATA Friends program where anybody can come in and do a guest author. You'll go through the application process, and I will personally edit and give you feedback on, you know, all articles that you want to post and promote your stuff. And I'm also on Twitter at adbertram, B-E-R-T-R-A-M. On Twitter there. So probably my blog and Twitter are the main points. And then I guess my publisher should tell me to plug PowerShell for sysadmins. I just came out with a new book, my first published book here last month. So go to PowerShellForSysAdmins.com if you want to learn about how to use PowerShell in the sysadmin world.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That was my conversation with Adam Bertram. I'm really glad I had an opportunity to talk with him. Adam, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show with me. And he has done just an amazing job building a community of content providers. His website, Adam the Automator, really just shows how much he cares about helping others grow in their IT knowledge and their IT careers. And I really enjoyed this topic, mostly because I'm right in the middle of it, right? I'm here creating content, kind of putting out my thoughts and ideas and trying to help people with, getting into IT and being in a system administrator. And I'm still in the early stages of that, right? The stuff that he talked about, I'm still in those early stages of it and really working on trying to get out regular content. It's not easy, and a lot of times life takes over, and it's really important to be intentional and make it a priority if it is a priority for you. And You know, kind of when you're searching the internet, you come across a lot of abandoned blogs, and there's a lot of unfinished courses and, you know, YouTube channels that have been abandoned and podcasts that only have a few episodes, that kind of stuff. And that does not surprise me. It's just really hard. It's really easy to have lots of energy in the beginning of a new thing or a new project, right, in those early stages. And as it becomes routine and as you hit some challenges, and it's just really easy to doubt yourself and to allow yourself to get distracted by some shiny new technology or hobby, and to not put the time into that thing that you started. And the important thing is to make a goal, you know, set a time period for that goal and stick to it and say, okay, like if you're talking about writing a blog that Adam was recommending, then say, okay, my goal is to, in the next 30 days, have a blog up and running, right? A platform where I can just start typing, right? And then you achieve that goal, okay, the next 30 days, maybe the next 6 months, let's stretch this a little bit and be a little bit more serious about it. In the next 6 months, my goal is to blog 2 entries a month, right? That's every other week. And so you're not putting so much pressure on yourself that you're, you know, setting yourself up for failure, but you're also not completely phoning it in and saying that, you know, making it so easy that it's not even a challenge. So finding that balance is key, right? Finding out, and you know your schedule, you know your time commitment, you know how much of your, you know, time, mental energy, you know, finances, because not all this stuff is free either. Some of these side hustles cost money before they make money. And you just got to be realistic with it, but also challenge yourself. So anybody who's in the middle of this or wants to do this, message me on LinkedIn or send me an email, dustin@sysadminshow.com, and just let me know what you're doing if you're interested in sharing. I'd love to hear about any of your goals for a side hustle and just kind of, you know, go through that experience with you since I'm in it as well. And anything you've learned, right? What have you learned about yourself and about the particular thing that you're working in, you know, what's working, what's not. And I can, if I get any feedback from any of you guys, I'll be happy to share it on future episodes so we can all benefit from it. So that's it for this show. I want to hear from you. Questions about your education, career, technology, or any ideas for future episodes? You can send me emails, dustin@sysadminshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @sysadminshow. Even though I'm not on Twitter very often, find me on LinkedIn. That's where I am most of the time. And until next time, I encourage you to never stop learning.